You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Matthew Leach, talking American League East with MLB.com's five AL East beat reporters. It's just about the midpoint of the season, so we'll be taking a look back at the first half, looking at pleasant surprises and disappointments, looking at moves that teams should make, and getting some fearless predictions as to where these five teams end up. But we're right about at the halfway point, so it's time to do a little looking back and a little looking forward. Give me one pleasant surprise from the Rays so far in 2015.
I think the biggest surprise has been Nathan Karns. This guy went to camp. Of course, you know, it looked like the starting pitching was totally set, save for the number five spot, and even the number five spot was only going to be held in theory until Matt Moore came back. So, and Alex Salome was battling out with Nathan Karns for that spot in spring training. Now you got Nathan Karns. He's really pitching strong as their number three guy. So, and he looks like he knows what he's doing, too. The last two times he got dinged up a little bit in the early going and was able to pitch, you know, out of trouble, minimize the damage, and give him six innings. So I'm putting him as the biggest surprise so far and probably, you know, a very nice surprise.
He was never a really highly regarded prospect. He was certainly a guy they were pleased to get. But do you think this is sustainable? Do you think he's a guy who can continue to pitch like this sort of quality mid-rotation starter?
You know, I think he can, based on what I've seen lately with him pitching when he's been dinged up. You know, I mean, as you know from covering baseball for a long time yourself, you know, a starter will tell you he might have good stuff 6 out of 30 times, you know, of 30 starts. So, you know, you got to learn how to adjust with your pitches when you're not with your best stuff, you know, what you rely on that night. Of course, he's had a nice surprise, too, that his changeup has kind of come along. So that's been an extra weapon to keep him off his fastball. And he's got, you know, a pretty good variance between the two. You know, he'll throw that changeup about 86, and, you know, he's throwing his fastball about 95. So that's a nice weapon.
What's the biggest disappointment for this club so far?
You know, I debated on this one, and I think I'm just going to have to say Rene Rivera's offense. They were thinking that they were going to get a major upgrade offensively at catcher based on what he did at San Diego last year. And he has had some hard luck. He's hit the ball hard a lot, but, you know, he's not even at the Mendoza line. So I think that would have to be qualified as the biggest disappointment, though. You know, who knows, this thing could straighten out, but and they are very pleased with his defense and calling games, but the offense just hadn't been there.
I know we've talked about this. Do you see any likelihood that they shift up, even if they don't replace him entirely, that they maybe find other ways to distribute that playing time, or is he the guy no matter what, even if he hits 160 all year?
I think he's the guy no matter what, even at 160. And they also are cognizant of the fact that he's never really played – you know, been the everyday catcher. So, you know, they're keeping an eye on how many games he plays. But right now there's really not another guy to come in and bump him out of there either. Kirk Casale has done fairly well and has hit pretty good. But I think they're, you know, hell or high water with Rivera.
The Rays are in pretty good shape. It's been a rough go here lately, but they're 2.5 games out, and I think externally a team where there was pretty low expectations is in a pretty decent spot. You know, they haven't massively overachieved, but they certainly haven't underachieved. If you could sort of point to a reason why they are now, or a couple of reasons, just what's if you could boil down why they are where they are now, a 500 team in the hunt, what would that be?
Well, I think they've done an incredible job with their flexibility. You know, losing all the guys they have to injury, and in particular the strength, having their the core of their team whittled down, you know, as they're starting pitching, and somehow managing to put together the first half they did. And like you said, they are on a little bit of a funk right now. But if I'm them, I feel like the basketball team that shot 15% in the first half and is still in the game, because, you know, they're, like you say, they're 2.5 out, and they've endured a pretty tough streak here. But I think one of the big questions is going to be, you know, whether this bullpen thing of late is an aberration. I know last night in 7 2/3 innings, or maybe 7 1/3. I can't remember exactly. They allowed 11 runs in that doubleheader. Very uncharacteristic for the bullpen they have, but you got to wonder if they're getting tired based on the amount of innings they're having to swallow up, even though they are bringing in shifts to take care of that middle relief, you know, back and forth between Durham. But last night was probably one of those, you know, where you really question whether they're going to be able to go forward the way they have with their bullpen.
What's the top storyline to watch for this club in the second half?
Well, I think, you know, it's going to be the progress maybe of what Matt Moore can bring them, and then whether or not they can manage the bullpen enough to, you know, navigate these tough waters the rest of the way. They have kind of babied at times Archer and Carnes and some of the starters. And, you know, Archer's had a tremendous first half. If this guy takes off in the second half, who knows, he could carry him. So, you know, I would say those three, you know, maybe Archer, see if he's going to, you know, take off with him. The bullpen and, you know, just if they're going to get some offense, you know, I think that's a big question as well.
What's one move that this team needs to make in order to make, and internal or external, if we're talking about calling somebody up, that's fine, but what's one transaction that this team needs to make to get where it wants to go in the second half?
Well, it's the same old, same old. I think they need a bat. And, you know, I wonder, you know, I've wondered, you know, I've looked at what Richie Schaefer's done at AAA and wondered if he couldn't be a guy they could bring up and, you know, their former number one pick and maybe play some corner outfield or first base or DH. But, you know, I don't think they're going to be able to go out and trade for the guy, you know, who is available offensively. Every team wants offense. But if they were able to get that guy, maybe that could bring Longoria alive a little bit. You know, all the scouts tell me Longoria never gets anything to hit. So occasionally he expands his zone. And, you know, that's two things. You know, if Archer can continue what he's doing and if suddenly Evan Longoria becomes the Evan Longoria of old, they might be really tough to deal with.
So given all that, with what we know, with what we think they need to do, with what might or might not happen, give me a prediction. Where does this team finish the season?
You know what? I think they're going to be right there at the end. Unless somebody in the East really does something to improve their clubs, they've battled pretty well in the East. So I think they're going to rebound from this funk and be in there till the end. So, you know, first, second, third place.
Brian, I think we know the answer to this one, but I'm going to go ahead and ask it. What's the biggest pleasant surprise of the first half for the 2015 Yankees?
I would have to say biggest surprise for me was Alex Rodriguez came back. He was healthy. He was productive, hitting the ball out of the park, doubles, homers, you name it, a force hitting third in the middle of that lineup. I think that it's easy to forget now. You roll the clock back to the first days of spring training in February. We didn't know if this guy could even get on the field. We didn't know what he was going to have left. We didn't know if he was going to be able to play any defense, whether he was going to hit or not. He was the great unknown. So I think that for all things considered, for him to be in the three spot, DH, reliable for the Yankees, producing, keeping his head down, not creating headlines, that's the biggest surprise to me. I think that nobody could have predicted this back in February.
Yeah, I mean, I think even an optimistic projection on him, and I think relative to the general populace, pretty optimistic about him, would have figured he would have been somewhere around what he was for a lot of 11 and 12, 270-ish, 350 OBP, but not a lot of power. And the thing that really stands out is the 16 home runs. Is this just a matter of a guy being healthier than he's been in a long time? What do you think has gone into him not only being a good hitter and getting on base, but regaining some of his pop?
I don't think the year off was the worst thing in the world for a guy who's 39 going on 40. I think that it allowed him to step back, and I think he's done some work mentally to kind of reformulate, and he wants to finish his career on a strong note there. But I think that physically, this is a guy who had been beat up. It seemed like every year he was going on the DL. He was having a lot of health issues, obviously the surgeries that we know about. There was a lot going on behind the scenes there, and it looked like he was limping to the finish of what was a great career. So I think that, you know, anybody who's 38, 39 years old, if they take a year off and come back, I mean, there's a question if the skills will still be there. But once they were, I think it showed the health had improved quite a bit. And look, I think that transitioning to DH role has helped him a lot too. I think you can underestimate the wear and tear that is on your body when you're playing third base every day, diving around, diving for balls, just being on your feet nine innings a night. I think this has been huge for him, and he says that he put all his trust in Joe Girardi, and he entrusted Joe was doing the right thing by DHing him, and I think that it's been for the best for both sides.
The other side of that coin, what's the biggest disappointment for the Yankees in the first half so far?
Yeah, biggest disappointment, I think you could go two ways on that, and I'm gonna split the difference there. I think on the pitching side, I'm going to say CeCe Sabathia. You were hoping he would be able to give them more of a chance and keep them in games, and it just seems like every time he takes the ball, you don't have a really great feeling about it on the Yankee side. He's especially struggled against right-handed hitters, and I don't know if you've noticed, there's a lot of those around the majors. So I think that it's been a tough go for Sabathia. I think you expected more there. He's obviously still transitioning into dealing with the lower velocity and being in the second phase of his career here. But it's a transition the Yankees are just going to have to ride out because obviously he's not going anywhere, as we've spoken about. On the offense side, I'm going to go Stephen Drew. I think that by this point you thought that there was going to be some more consistency offensively. I think that last year he got a lot of a pass because of the missing spring training. You figured that maybe it was an interrupted year, maybe a full offseason of training, a regular spring training would help him. The numbers just aren't there. And I know he's had some power. He's got these random games that pop up where he'll hit a couple homers, but the batting average still under 200. You want to see more out of your everyday second baseman.
So as we talk right now, the Yankees are a first-place team. They're five games over 500 and probably more or less within range of what was a fair expectation of them, maybe on slightly on the optimistic end. If there's one story or one sequence of events that has them in first place and having a pretty decent overall year, what would you point to as sort of the reason why they are where they are right now?
I think it's, again, I'm going to go two things. I'm going to say they're hitting home runs again. They've gone back to being the Bronx Bombers, and it's not just A-Rod. It's Mark Teixeira has come back. He's an all-star now in the first half. Brett Gardner setting the table at the top of the lineup. He had a monster June with Jacoby Ellsbury out. He was on base a ton. Brian McCann came back and is hitting for power. He's having more of the Brian McCann type year that the Yankees gave him $85 million in expectation of. I think the middle of the lineup is not something that opposing pitchers can just mow through, and that's what we've seen the last couple of years because of injuries, because of the fact that Mark Teixeira wasn't the real Mark Teixeira, any number of things. I think that the middle of the lineup is a power threat again. The Yankees are hitting home runs. That's why they're near the top of the league in runs scored. That's a huge thing, and the bullpen has been pretty good. I think Dellin Betances has had a couple blips. They're only going to get stronger with getting Andrew Miller back now. And the other guys like Jason Shreve and Justin Wilson, for the most part, have been pretty good. So I think that they've been getting leads, and for the most part, they've been holding them.
As we look ahead to the second half, what's the top storyline to watch, the top thing that's going to kind of tilt where this team goes?
I think health is always huge, especially with a veteran team like this. You need to keep these guys on the field. You saw it with Ellsbury. They were a different team when you had Jacoby Ellsbury for the first 6 weeks of the season. And obviously, Brett Gardner was able to fill in, and Chase Headley got a lot of time in the two spot, and Chris Young was up there, too, for a little bit. But you can't replace guys like that. They've got a lot of big money poured into these guys, the Ellsbury's, the Teixeira's, the McCann's, the A-Rod's. When you go to that second tier and try to replace those guys, it's really tough to equal that production. So I think that, you know, like any team, if the Yankees can stay healthy, and especially because they're a veteran team, they're an older team, and that falls on Joe Girardi to really keep an eye on these guys, give them a break when they need it. I know that fans don't like seeing when a guy gets a day off just for rest, but these are really necessary. So, you know, the days of when you saw guys playing 158, 162 games a year, I think that as far as the Yankees are concerned, these guys, you're not going to see that anymore. So I think that Girardi is going to have to pick his spots and be smart about it. But if they can keep these guys healthy and keep them off the DL, that's going to be huge for them.
Give me one move, and it can be internal or external, that this team needs to make to get to the postseason.
Oh, to get to the postseason?
I think wherever they want to go, sure. I mean, what's a move this team needs to do?
Well, I'll tell you what. I think that they can contend in this AL East the way they are right now. I think that they're flawed, but so is everybody else in this division. But if they really want to take that next step and become a upper echelon team and a real team that you want to say is going to dominate in October, well, I think that the first thing that jumps out at me is they got to do something about second base. I think that at some point here, last year they had Brian Roberts up until the trade deadline, and they knew that Brian Roberts wasn't their ideal fit for second base, but they wrote it out. I think you're getting to that point with Stephen Drew now where the clock is starting to get to midnight, and you're going to take a step back and say, all right, we've got a pretty big sample size here that suggests that this guy is not the guy that we thought we were signing. He's only $5 million. They said they could cut him loose if things weren't working out. I would say that things aren't working out. I know the Yankees have been very patient with this one. They want to see it work out. I'm just not seeing the results here. So I think that's probably where I'd start if I was in Brian Cashman's office. I would be looking to upgrade to second base.
Do you see a guy out there who would be an upgrade?
Yeah, I mean, Ben Zobrist would be a huge upgrade. The question is, I don't think the A's is just going to give him away, but he's in town right now. He was asked about New York yesterday. He said he likes New York just as much as he likes any other city. So it's not like he's born and bred dying to wear pinstripes, and obviously the A's are not just going to give him away, but he's a guy that I think would be an instant upgrade at second base, so let me throw that name out there. But barring that, I think you have to look at these numbers that Rob Revsnyder is putting up at AAA and say, how bad defensively can he really be if you're refusing to call him up? So I know he's a work in progress. They want to give him as much time there. He hasn't played the position a whole lot. But if the bat is carrying him and it can translate to the big leagues, and I'm not sure that it can, but everything at AAA suggests that this guy can hit him a little bit here. I'd want to see him sooner rather than later.
So adding all that up, when we talk about the Yankees at the end of the season, what are we going to talk about? Where does this team finish? How deep, if they get to October, do they go? Where's this team going over the next 3 or 4 months?
Well, let me pull out my crystal ball, and while I'm at it, I'll...
What are you, Tony La Russa?
Yeah, and while I'm at it, I'll buy some lottery tickets. But I think that what we talked about in spring training, we said this team was going to win somewhere between 84 and 87 games, and be in the thick of the division race or the wild card race. So I think that nothing I've seen in the first half tells me that's not true. They are a flawed team. They're the kind of team that can run off a hot streak and dominate for a little while, and then they fall into a tailspin and leave you scratching your head and lose 7 out of 8 or something like that. I think that they're that kind of team. There's going to be ups and downs, but they're lucky that they're in a division where nobody's running away with it. They're competitive there. There's a lot of parity. And they have a strong base. I think that they can hang in the race with what they have, and I think that you're looking at a team that should be thinking about printing playoff tickets, whether it's a wild card or a division team. And I think that once you get in that dance, you've heard it so many times, the first step is getting there. After that, anything can happen. Any team can get hot, and this team, just as much as anybody, can get hot at the right time.
Britt, we've just about reached almost exactly the halfway point in an unusual development. The halfway point falls almost right in line with the All-Star game, so it's time to take a look back and a look ahead. Start with the biggest pleasant surprise of the first half of the 2015 Orioles.
Well, you know, I think they've had a lot of good things happen in terms of individual player performance, but Manny Machado, to me, has to be at the top. I mean, already a career high in home runs. A guy who's really developed into the player that people thought he was going to be coming off of those consecutive season-ending knee surgeries. I think he's really carried the team, given them a whole lot of pop and something to feel good out because that offense has had really some highs and some lows, but he has been absolutely phenomenal for them. I think I'm going to have to go Manny Machado.
And then the opposite of that, what's been the biggest negative surprise or biggest disappointment of the first half for this Oriole team?
Well, it has to be Bud Norris. You know, really no one on the team has lost their job, and Bud's been demoted to the bullpen. 6.79 ERA and 11 starts. Got off to a rough start, hit the DL, was really sick, lost about 15, 20 pounds. Hasn't been able to find his stride. So he's a guy to keep an eye on in the second half. How will the Orioles use him? Is he going to stay in that bullpen? Are they going to try and trade him? He's a free agent next year, making a decent amount of money, so I don't know what the market would be for him. But considering the year he had last year, which was a career-high 15 wins, really good in the second half of the season, he has to be the biggest disappointment so far.
Is it any clearer as each day goes by? And again, we're talking the Orioles, so nobody really knows from day to day. They do so much with their roster. But is it any clearer as days go by what the options are, what they can do? I mean, again, this is a real problem. You addressed this sort of problem last week with having Norris in the pen. It hamstrings them in a couple of ways. Is there any more clarity on sort of what they can do to get him right and get him a part of this team?
Not really, unfortunately. I mean, like I mentioned, he's making a decent amount of money, so moving him is hard. And he's out of options, so you can't just send him to the minor leagues. So the Orioles are going to have to work hard, whether it's getting him on track to be a feasible bullpen option or finding a way for, like you said, for him to turn it around, because where he is right now, how he's throwing, it's not helping anybody. And he just looks like a guy who has lost confidence, lost his step. Dave Wallace and Dom Chidi, kind of the co-pitching coaches there of the Orioles, have really worked well with problem cases before. I mean, look no further than Ubaldo Jimenez, who had such a great year last year after being demoted last year to the bullpen. So hopefully Bud North takes this the right way, and that is really an opportunity to step back, get better, and get back on track. And I think if he does that, then he has a chance of really turning this thing around.
The Orioles are two games over 500, very much in the mix in a crowded AL East. Probably not where they wanted to be, but also given their record, frankly, in pretty good shape. So what's the single biggest reason that they are kind of where they are, which is to say in decent shape but probably not where they'd want to be?
I think it has to be the pitching. I talked about Manny being the big surprise and kind of carrying that offense through stretches. Well, there's been stretches where that offense just hasn't been able to do anything. And when you look at the pitching staff, they've been able to do a really nice job in that rotation. Chris Tillman has really struggled as their opening day starter, but you're looking at a huge year from Ubaldo Jimenez, a career year from Wei-Yin Chen, who's also a free agent at the end of the year. Miguel Gonzalez has done what he does best, which is pitch really well under the radar. And the addition of Kevin Gausman to that rotation should really help them. And then, of course, you got a pair of all-stars in Darren O'Day and Zach Britton at the back end of that bullpen. So they've been able, pitching-wise, to hold their own, which has helped them win a lot of games that they had no business winning.
As we look ahead to the second half, what's one really key storyline to watch to determine sort of where this team finishes the year?
I think that you're going to watch a storyline. It's going to probably have to be what ends up happening here with Matt Wieters and Chris Davis. They're kind of their two big pending free agents. They're two guys who, as if still can reach another level. Davis, of course, is a guy that's really capable of carrying this offense for long stretches. Matt Wieters gave them a boost when he first came up. And, of course, he hasn't caught back-to-back games yet. So that could be big as well. So I would look for those two guys, see what kind of develops there, because if the two of them really turn it on, and again, they should, they're facing free agency here in just a few months, then it could really, really help the Orioles down the stretch.
What is one move, either internal or external, and obviously we don't necessarily mean a specific trade, though if you have one, that would be awesome. One move that would really help this team get to where it's trying to get?
I think they need to get a corner outfielder. And hold on just a second, because everyone's going to say they have about eight of them right now. But what they have is really a logjam, and they have no roster flexibility, and we've talked about this for weeks. And most of the reason that is because they're taking five or six guys and they like a certain skill set of each guy and they're platooning them. And you can't afford to do that. I think if they go out, they get a corner outfielder, preferably a right-handed bat, then they're able to part ways with some of these other guys and actually have some movable pieces. That's the biggest difference. This team this year, as opposed to last year, is there really aren't any movable pieces. Should they have a starter or somebody falter, their options are really limited, especially now that they've moved a guy who's unmovable in Bud Norris to the bullpen. So in my opinion, I know everyone always says it's about pitching, go get a pitcher. And I don't have a problem with the pitching. I think the Orioles need to go out and they need to get a corner outfielder and create a little bit more roster flexibility.
What do they have to make that happen, be it prospects, ability to take on salary, whatever? How would they make that happen?
Prospect-wise, they're not going to deal with Kevin Gausman. Dylan Bundy's a guy who, unfortunately, his stock is very low. So I don't know what they'd have to part with to get one of those guys. I do know that salary to take on is something that they should be able to do. It's something that they sold all winter the fact that they weren't going to make a whole lot of winter moves and that this would enable them to make a move at the deadline. So I would expect that they would be able to do something to make this team better in July. It's not going to be the blockbuster move. That's just not the Orioles. It's not Dan Duquette. But I do think that there's a way that they can upgrade. There's a way they can find that outfielder.
So given all of this, with just about 3 months to play, where does this team finish the season?
Does what? I'm sorry.
Where do they finish the season? Is this a division winner? Is this a team that comes up just short? Where do the Orioles, what are we talking about at the end of the year?
Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, there are stretches where they look like the team to beat in the AL East, and then there are stretches like they're going through right now on this road trip where they look like a team that doesn't deserve to be in the postseason. So it's really, really tough because the AL East, as you mentioned, it is crowded. There's a lot kind of going on. And even though the Orioles haven't played that good, they're still very, very much in the mix. So I think this is probably a team who you're talking about in September is still in contention. And then you just roll the dice. You hope that they stay hot the last few weeks and they're able to edge out the rest of the team. Because I think it's really going to come down to, in this division in particular, what team gets hot and has less injuries at the right time. And that's in September. I think you're going to see about three teams still in the mix in the final few weeks, you know, similar to what it was 2 years ago. And it's going to be up to the Orioles to really seize that opportunity or not. I honestly don't have a feel at all whether the team is going to make the postseason or not. I just can't seem to grasp what they are and who they are because they just go through weeks, like I said, where they look unbeatable and weeks where it looks like they're never going to win another series. So it's been a really tough year to kind of figure out where this team is going. And, of course, they have all those free agents at the end of the year. So they're certainly the mindset for this club that it's win now.
First of all, what's the biggest pleasant surprise for the 2015 Blue Jays at this point?
Well, I think everyone kind of went into this year knowing that the offense was going to be a strength, but I think what the biggest surprise to me is the contributions that the Blue Jays have been getting from guys who aren't those, you know, elite-type hitters that everybody expected going into the year. I mean, Michael Saunders was supposed to be, a key part of this offense, and Chris Colabello coming in has really kind of changed things for the Blue Jays, and whether or not he can keep that up in the second half is certainly up for debate, but the fact of the matter is they've got a lot of value out of him so far, and he's really kind of settled down that lineup. And then you have other guys in there too that weren't expected to be huge performers, like a Kevin Pillar. He was supposed to be the fourth outfielder on this team, and he's a guy who really came on strong. Obviously with the glove, we've seen so many highlight reel plays that he's made this year, but the bat as well. I mean, he went through a little bit of slump in May, but other than that, he's been a very consistent performer for those teams. So, the outfield component with Kevin Pillar and Chris Colabello, to me, has been a pretty big surprise.
And on the opposite end, what's the biggest disappointment for this club so far?
I really think there's one guy would be Drew Hutchison. He's someone who, got the opening day start. I think everyone kind of expected him to take his game to a new level this year, and it just hasn't happened in the first half. And, sometimes easy to forget just how young this guy is, because he's always had that presence of kind of being a veteran guy, but he's not. And even before the Tommy John surgery a couple of years ago, he had very limited experience in the big leagues. And while last year was a good stepping stone for him, this year he just hasn't been able to continue that progression. And that's a big blow to the Blue Jays rotation, because he was supposed to be a real prime chip along with guys like R.A. Dickey and Mark Burley. And the consistency just hasn't been there from start to start. We've seen flashes of it. There was a complete game shutout over Chicago earlier this year. But overall, the performance on the road, with the ERA above 9, it's just not getting it done for this team.
Yeah, going back almost 2 months, it really is almost every other start. Good, bad, good, bad, good, bad. It's almost predictable in its up and downness. Are they getting any closer to even having a read as to what's going on, as to what happens when it goes wrong or what happens when it goes right? Is there any read even just on what's going on here?
Well, just talking with pitching coach Pete Walker, a couple days ago, he really thinks that they need to do some work on the changeup, and it's a pitch that they've been trying to get him to throw. And he hasn't had a lot of confidence in it. And that's a problem when you're trying to throw a pitch and you don't have confidence in it. That's not going to lead to very good results. But it's something that they really want him to work on. And they think that he needs something more consistently than the fastball and just the slider. And so they're really trying to put an emphasis on him getting to use that more. I think you're probably going to see that more in the second half. But, you know, overall, I think a lot of his problems have come down to, you know, the walks haven't been high, but the command within the strike zone has been a major issue. There's just the fastball command hasn't been there. You know, it'll come and go at times. And unlike last year, he was always the kind of guy who seemed like no matter what was happening, he never let an inning get away from him. Now it's the complete opposite. When an inning starts going sideways, you can almost see it in his face even a little bit that, you know, the confidence isn't quite there like it used to be in the past. And a lot of those innings where in the past he would have been able to get out of some of those jams seem to go sideways in a hurry, and that's led to a lot of difficulty on his part.
The next question on my sort of checklist here is a weird one for the Blue Jays, because the question is, how is it that they got exactly where they are? But the Blue Jays, more than almost any other team, I'm not even sure exactly where they are. They've got the best run differential in the American League by a lot, and they're two games over 500 and a game and a half out of first place. So they're really a Rorschach test. And so I'd almost preface it by saying, when you look at this team, where are they? Are they? Is this a team that's in the hunt? Is this a team that's struggling? Is it all of the above? Where is this team right now as far as you're concerned?
And that's the really confusing part. And you know, last year, you know, I think a lot of people think of this team right now, you know, being a better overall team than they were last year. But, you know, if you actually look at the record, you know, the 2014 record was better at this point in time than this team. You know, that changed going into the All-Star break last year because of, you know, a prolonged losing streak that they had, and then they never really got things back on track. But the fact of the matter is last year's team overall was much better than the first half of 2015. You know, the reason they are where they are right now is obviously the lineup. You know, they have the best, you know, offense in baseball, and that kind of speaks for itself. But the pitching staff just hasn't been able to find any real kind of consistency. I mean, Mark Burley has been one of the only reliable performers in the rotation. You know, R.A. Dickey had a disappointing first half. I mean, you could easily put him up there with one of the bigger surprises, along with a guy like Hutchinson, in terms of the underperformers of the first half. But, you know, really 1-5, Burley's been the only guy that they've been able to rely on consistently. And then you go into the bullpen, and Roberto Osuna has been the only guy down there that has been, you know, a guy that John Gibbons has been able to trust on a regular basis. You know, it would be remarkable to think about where this team would be if not for Roberto Osuna, and he's a guy who's 20 years old, had never pitched above Class A before this year, and he's really been kind of a saving grace for them down there. But they just haven't been able to get, you know, the production from the other guys. You know, Brett Cecil struggled for a long time this year. Aaron Loop went through some of his battles. And Steve Delabar has been up and down. It's just, you know, overall, they haven't been getting the pitching performances they need to really take advantage of that great lineup. And so that's why you've seen problems in one-run games. And, you know, it seems like the Blue Jays either blow teams out or, you know, they've found ways to lose those tight ball games. And that kind of explains the run differential as well.
Give me one top storyline to watch for this team in the second half.
I think a lot of it's going to depend on what Anthopoulos is able to mind, because I think this year more than ever I think is going to be a time when the Blue Jays are really, really active. And so obviously the pitching is certainly one thing to watch. Hutchinson, I think they really need to have him turn around. But internally, one guy to watch in the second half would be Aaron Sanchez, because he's a guy who could potentially be an answer to either the rotation or the bullpen. And I think that really his role will depend on whether the Blue Jays are able to add a couple of starters. Realistically, they probably only add one. So that might mean he tries to come in and be that solidifying force in the rotation. If they're not able to find any bullpen pieces in the next few weeks, then there's a chance that he ends up there. And he could be a guy that they're looking to pair with Roberto Osuna to be kind of, you know, the solidifying force down there. So I think he's a really big wild card for the second half. First and foremost, they need to get him healthy, but it's starting to look that he'll be back around, hopefully, the July 31st trade deadline. So, you know, he's going to partner up with whatever Anthopoulos is able to add from outside the organization, and they'll go from there.
This is, to some extent, closely connected to what you're just talking about, but what's a move, either internal or external, that people should be watching for this team in the second half?
I think really it's going to be, I think ultimately it's the starting rotation more than first and foremost. You know, Anthopoulos has, you know, talked about the bullpen a little bit, but, you know, it really seems like the shift has focused, from, you know, the bullpen to the rotation. So it's going to be interesting to see what he can put together. But I think this is really going to be the year you're going to see some of those prospects move in order to make those necessary changes. And, you know, it could involve guys that we've already seen up here, guys who in the past were untouchable, like a Daniel Norris, someone like that, Matt Boyd, who made a brief appearance at the big league level. There's going to be some guys who previously were considered untouchable who probably no longer are because, you know, all bets are off going in into that trade deadline. And, you know, more than ever, Anthopoulos really has to kind of rise to the occasion and find a way to take advantage of this core that he currently has in place because, you know, guys like Batista only under contract for, you know, the rest of this year and then next year as well, and Encarnacion as well. I mean, the time to win for this organization really is now, and that's something you need to look into.
So give me a prediction. Where does this team finish the year?
I think they will find a way to sneak into the postseason just because I think the division is so much up for grabs. I mean, you know, you kind of look around the league, and it was kind of, in my opinion, kind of only a matter of time before the Rays started to struggle, especially with the injuries that they've had, and we've seen that recently. I just have a hard time to believe that the Yankees will be able to keep up that consistent production in the second half. And you know, that lineup is just going to keep the Blue Jays in every single game. Now, it's kind of hard to make the prediction now because, you know, it really does depend on what they do. There's no question that they need to add at least a couple of pieces. But, you know, I really do think that this is the year they do it because I think so much is riding on this season. You know, we went into this year and a lot of people were saying, you know, this is a make or break year for Anthopoulos. He has to make the postseason in order to keep his job. So there's really motivation there to give up some pieces for the future to fill the immediate need now. So I think that they are going to take the division, but it's not going to be easy, and I think it's going to be a situation where, at the very least, this is going to be the first time probably since 1993 that the Blue Jays have really played meaningful games in September, because that, even last year when they went on such a nice run, they were really out of it by the time September rolled around. I don't think they are going to be in that situation this year, just because of the way the rest of the division is shaping up.
Ian, it probably seems like you've been covering this team for 6 months already with everything that's gone on, but we are right about at the halfway point, and so it's time to do a little look back and look ahead at the 2015 Boston Red Sox. And so I start with, what's the biggest pleasant surprise of this Red Sox team so far?
Yeah, I would say definitely the emergence of Xander Bogaerts, you know, not just offensively, but defensively also. Just in every way, this guy is a more mature, more polished player than he was a year ago, has a lot more quickness with his range, and just effective. This is a guy who's been hitting third for the last few weeks for them, and just a sign of how far he's come. And he's now, you know, when the game's on the line, Xander Bogaerts is now the Red Sox hitter you want up at the plate. And I think a lot of us would have been surprised if we had said that back in February or March.
Yeah, he was a guy, and they're very excited about a year ago, and I think was kind of unfairly maligned for a 21-year-old shortstop. That was not a bad year last year. But this is a pretty nice step forward, and to me, I think the big thing that stands out is just he's getting base hits. A lot of what he's doing is pretty similar. The power production isn't that different. Homers are down, doubles are up. You know, his walks and strikeouts are about the same, but he's getting base hits. What kind of goes into that? What's the difference between Bogaerts in 14, Bogaerts in 15?
Just the approach and the pitches he's swinging at, you know, well, the walks, you know, are pretty much the same. I mean, last year he would strike out on sliders in the dirt. You know, he just didn't, you know, pitchers were able to fool him. Now he goes up with a clear approach, clear knowledge of, you know, what they're throwing at him, clear knowledge of how to make adjustments, and he's just a much more cerebral hitter, and he can really work a good at-bat this year, which he wasn't really doing last year.
And on the downside, what's the biggest disappointment of this 2015 Sox team so far?
Boy, if you had said in spring training that Mike Napoli was going to be hitting, you know, in the 190s in the week heading into the All-Star break and was just going to be a complete mess like he's been, you know, I think a lot of people would have been taken aback because this guy had a monster spring. He had that whole sleep surgery, the sleep apnea surgery, where he was feeling so much better and was just really excited about the season he was going to have. And he's just been a mess. I mean, Mike Napoli's a guy who's had slumps in his career. He's been a streak hitter, but his slumps have just been unusually long this year. And it's to the point, you know, you don't know if the guy is going to last the season with the team right now. You know, it's hard to believe he will.
Excuse me. The Red Sox, it's funny, for all the perception of what a disastrous year it's been, they're five games under and five games out, so they're very much in the mix. But if you could point to one or two causes that has this team in fifth place, five games under, as opposed to leading the division, as I think a lot of people thought they would be, what would it be?
Yeah, it's funny. For all the talk about how this team, you know, they didn't have an ace, everyone was worried that they didn't have an ace. You know, if this team has just pitched up to its capability, and the five starting pitchers had just pitched up to their track records, the Red Sox would probably be leading the American League East right now. You have Rick Porcello, who was just, you know, had an utter disaster of a first half, and you know, nobody could have imagined that. He's just he looks lost out there, and they really need him to get it back together. Wade Miley's been sort of up and down, but two other guys who have been real disappointments have been Justin Masterson. His stuff just hasn't come back the way they thought it would. You know, that he had the injuries last year. He was seemingly over the injuries this year and just doesn't have any life on his pitches. He can put two, three good innings together, but he can't sustain anything. And he can't seem to put more than one good start together. You know, he'll have one good start and then have a step back. And for Joe Kelly to be a Triple-A along with Alan Craig, the other player they got in the trade for John Lackey, to have both those players at Triple-A, you know, that's a big probably reason why the Red Sox are where they are. But, you know, the good news is Clay Buchholz has been great lately. So it looks like they might have an ace going forward here.
Yeah, it would be very funny if this team didn't have any rotation depth but did have an ace. Just further prove that, as your former GM said, we don't know parentheses squat. What's one storyline to watch most closely for this club in the second half?
Yeah, I think that you really got to keep an eye on Rick Porcello because he signed this big deal, $20 million a year, before he had even thrown his first pitch with the Red Sox. And he ends the first half. He's 0-7 with an 80 ERA in his last eight starts. So I think every start of his right now is going to be kind of must watch to see if he'll finally start relaxing. They get the command of the sinker back and become the real. I think they really thought he would be a solid number two type of pitcher. And he's been a five, if that, so far. So I think that's the key thing to watch right now.
What's a move, either internal or external, that you would watch for this team to make between now and the trade deadline? Or, frankly, between the end of the year, if it's a minor league?
Yeah, I think the Red Sox are going to hit. We thought they were going to hit when the year started. They didn't hit for a while, but they are now. So I think their lineup is largely set. I think the interest is going to be what they do with the pitching. You know, especially as if they get closer to first place here as we get toward July 31st. I mean, do they just bring another young gun up like a Brian Johnson that works so well with Eduardo Rodriguez, or do they make that move for Cole Hamels, someone of that ilk to make a big difference in that rotation? So that's what I'm going to be keeping an eye on over these next couple weeks.
What's your read on that? Do you think that they will be a player for someone like Hamels, Cueto, Kazmir, any of those guys?
I think if the Red Sox feel they can win this thing, they'll be very aggressive. I mean, we saw with Jake Peavy 2 years ago. You know, when the Red Sox have a team that they feel can go deep into the playoffs, they'll invest in that team. But if this is a team that's going to be sort of mediocre and inconsistent like they have been at times this season, I think they'll just go with what they have. So I think, in other words, these next 2-3 weeks are crucial for this team. This team has to show the front office what type of team this is and give the front office and ownership a reason to believe in this team and a reason to go out and make a big splash. So I think it's really on the players right now in terms of what type of move the front office makes.
Do they have the pieces that it would take to acquire a real front-line starting pitcher?
I think they do. I mean, the Red Sox have a very deep farm system. They also have some... I think they have some major league players that would interest other teams. So I think they could be, you look at a guy like Jackie Bradley Jr., who I think would be very attractive to another team. And, they have a number of good prospects in their farm system, especially after getting Mancata. That only made the system deeper so they can trade, some other guys. So I think the Red Sox, if they decide to do it, I think they're well positioned to make a move.
So to close out, give me a prediction. This team is, as we said, fifth place, but only five games out as we speak. Where do they finish the season?
I think this team finishes in second place and right in the mix for a wild card spot.
This is MLB.com Extras. Thanks, everybody, for listening.